Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Molly and Hall.
We're trying to wake Chicago up.
Live at 5 on 670 The Score.
And here they come.
I don't want to beat up Matt Nagy for the BU stuff because last year we were praising his ingenuity and individuality. And I think that's got to be fair. If you're going to compliment him then, it's hard to criticize that aspect of him now, even though he needs to be better as a head coach. That moment on the sideline that turned into a holiday commercial,
yeah,
that didn't have to happen on the sideline on national television. It could have happened in the locker room. If your quarterback was impaired to the point where everybody understood what was going on and he was injured, replace him without explanation. Explain it later. Win the game now.
This has been as disappointing a season as we can remember in a long time. And part of that is that they were good last year and the expectation was that they would be better. Part of it is they weren't afraid. They weren't shying away from talking about a Super Bowl run when they were in training camp. That is very embittering when you have those years where it's almost like the badness of a season erases the success of the year before.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall.
Good morning, guy over there.
Mornings on The Score.
Hurricanes are good. That's a good team. But the Hawks have been playing very well. Last night, before the loss, they were the hottest team in hockey.
You're like a hurricane. You are like a hurricane. There's calm in your eyes. There's calm in your eyes. And I'm getting blown away. And I'm getting blown away. Okay.
Mully Hall.
I'm so fired up.
Here we go.
Mully at Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Neil Young, David. Neil Young in the news because they're not giving him citizenship because of pot smoking.
I saw that. Yeah. Good morning, Mully. Happy
Good
Thursday.
Good morning, David. How are you, sir?
I'm sorry I didn't make more of that musical reference yesterday when my mind was on hockey and yours was on music. That's okay, though. I need to be shaken from my hockey coma every now and then.
Well, you were right about the Hurricanes.
They're good.
They were all right. Let me ask you this, and we'll get into other stuff, but Mitchell Trubisky was back. He took part in practice. Everything seemed to go pretty swimmingly.
Fully participated.
He did. Yeah. I don't know what the conclusion is, but he told the media his injured hip, and I'm using air quotes, injured hip, feels fine. And he said he's playing. So,
well, the hips don't lie. And I think that he looked pretty good on the practice field in the Zapruder film that we studied, dissected, that was released on the Twitter machine. I think a couple beat writers got it out there. I watched Rich Campbell's feed. Look, Mitch was hurt. He's got a hip pointer. I'm not minimizing the pain of hip pointers. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. You get up a couple days later, it probably feels good. It didn't sound like Matt Nagy was as ready to deem him ready to go as Mitch was.
Matt Nagy may have benched him, okay? Hip pointer or not, and you can look at the tape and you'll see all the problems.
Well, let me ask you this.
That Matt Nagy may have said, son, that's enough.
If Mitch was 25 of 32 for 297 and looking efficient and the Bears were down 10 with 3.5 minutes to go, do you think it would have been inclined to overlook the hip pointer?
I think it would have been a miracle.
Okay. So that's performance related.
The numbers are related.
All right, but let's not say that.
Yeah, but there is performance related issues.
We'll get into that later.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that. There's a lot there. There's no way around it. And I mean, if he's got the hip and he can hop, hooray! That was a hip hop
hooray.
Yeah.
I got that one.
Yeah. Lauri Markkanen busted out of his slump.
Finally, it's about
time. Did he really?
Yeah. Yes.
Did he really?
Yes. Yes. When we're looking,
all right.
When we're looking for progress, steady
then
incremental
we're
progress,
find it wherever
if you will,
we want.
He has not done that. Scored more than 20 points in about 4 weeks. First time in November,
he scored 24 points.
Yeah.
On 7 of 14 shooting, and the Bulls won 109-89 against a team in the Pistons that lost its fifth straight game.
They look wayward.
I okay. Satoransky Sato had 15 points, and he had like a lot of assists.
He was a floor leader last night, Mully.
Shaq Harrison had 15 points.
The Shaq Rabbit.
I think he had 11 rebounds.
He was everywhere.
So did Shaq Harrison break out is my question.
No, because Shaq Harrison isn't going to determine the course of your season. Lauri Markkanen is. When he plays like that.
Did he play like that?
Well, he asserted himself early. He had double figures at halftime.
Right.
And I think that's what we were challenging him to do.
And he hit a three late.
And he had two, like...
He ran the floor and dunked.
They fouled him three times on three-pointers.
Okay.
That's a dumb team.
Yeah.
Now, here's the problem that
they lost
their
fifth in a row. I don't know if I mentioned it.
If your glass of coffee is half full or half empty today, are you excited that Markkanen took a step forward, or are you worried about Zach LaVine taking a step back?
Yes.
Single digits for Zach. First time in a long time that that's happened.
Let me tell you something. They were talking about it on the pregame, and I really hadn't thought it through. KC was asked a question, and KC said, if this continues, if you double it up, you know, they were 4-10 at the time. If you end up 8-22 or something,
yeah,
don't you have to think about trading one of the two of them?
I love Casey's honesty, and he's pretty candid about that, and he's right. He's right. And that's what we've been talking about without talking about it.
One guy goes, the other guy goes. They don't go together.
You have two decisions to make, and I think I guess another way to put it is, and we should have made this a 5-5 question.
Yes.
I think the Bulls are more committed to Jim Boylan finishing out this year than they might be the idea of the tandem of Markkanen and LaVine if things go south.
Well, here's what I was thinking. You know, the NBA this year is not the league of the super team. What's fascinating, I haven't seen all of the numbers, but I saw a story that the ratings are taking an unbelievable dump. The ratings are way down for the NBA.
Numbers are bad.
So you don't have the super teams, okay? Now, they probably wanted Zion on more. Maybe we're seeing too much of a team that is missing its star. But they wanted the big storyline is there were 10 teams that could win the title. Which tandem was best? Everyone had a tandem. And then when you look at the Bulls, if you just take the tandem thing, 10 teams with tandems, well, the Bulls tandem, can they play together?
Right. Two thoughts there.
And yeah. Zach LaVine.
And those guys, to me, were facing more pressure than their head coach was this year to prove something, because that's the kind of expectations that they carry. And also, I know the front office needed them to be the reason for the outcome this year more than the coach was. As for the tandem idea, you're right. But look around the league. Number one, Zion's not played yet. And number two, last night was the first time you saw Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on the floor at the same time for the Clippers.
Right.
They won a great game in overtime.
Right.
But that was the first time in you know, a week before Thanksgiving, because of injury, because of load management, they had not played together at the same time until last night.
I wonder if the Bulls are a team that's set up to win if you just took one of those guys and plopped them in. If you took one of those two guys, you know, preferably the guy that just won the title, and you dropped him in on this Bulls team, mm-hmm. how good could you be? Because they have a lot of elements. They have a bench. They have a lot of different ways of playing. And all they need are better players. They need like one really, really good player.
Is the same head coach, though?
Well, I don't know. I think
you'd find out how limiting he is
right.
if you had a superstar like that. And I think what you're saying is interesting, because he's not Kawhi Leonard, but I think that the Kawhi Leonard, the superstar sort of persona, is the one that they kind of want Zach LaVine to take.
Right.
He needs to be that guy, but I don't know if he is that guy.
He might be a number two guy, is I guess what I'm saying. But if he's the number one guy, Lauri Markkanen is not the number two guy. And if Lauri Markkanen is the number one guy, Zach doesn't seem to be able to be the number two guy.
Well, I've always thought of Lauri Markkanen potentially being the number one guy.
Yeah.
Because that's the way that this team was sort of structured. And I think when you saw his rookie season, that's the trajectory he thought he was on.
Because he's European and he's being sold as Dirk Nowitzki. I mean, that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, it is.
But if you had Luka Doncic, then maybe you'd be halfway there.
Oh, my gosh. Leading the NBA in triple doubles,
looking awful good,
on his way to an early MVP type season. That is a difference maker, impact guy. Yeah, you would love to have him.
I'd like to watch him more. I'd like him on TV more.
I would like to see him more. I thought the same thing last night. I was like, the Mavericks are interesting team, and I don't think that they make a lot of national TV appearances.
No, I don't see much of them. All right. Prior to the game, Derrick Rose told Will Perdue, and we'll talk to Will later in the program, that if load management was a thing, he might still be a Bull.
Yeah, we need to get into that. 5-5 is going to be a good opportunity to kind of examine that.
Derrick had 18 points.
Assertion.
Blake Griffin, the ghost of Blake Griffin, as it turns out, just his third game this season, added 16. And the Pistons, as we said, no good. News on Otto Porter Jr., he's going to be out an additional 2 weeks after a follow-up MRI taken Tuesday revealed a bone bruise that wasn't discovered in the initial MRI 2 weeks ago.
That might have been the most significant thing that happened last night that wasn't necessarily discussed a lot, or because of the victory, you felt like it was overlooked. But Otto Porter Jr., sort of a stabilizing force, has not been the same player this year.
He gives them great spacing on offense.
Yeah.
He can do some things. It's pity.
So that's not good.
I thought we had decided that the Bulls were going to be healthy this year.
I thought we had decided that they were going to compete for a playoff spot this year.
And
maybe they still will.
Your guy, Chandler Hutchinson, he had been starting because Porter was out. He had to sit out with inflammation in both shins.
Ouch, that's going to hurt.
That's
both shins.
Double shin inflammation.
We could have a conversation with him about that. Maybe is gout been ruled out?
Oh, boy. We're getting a little too personal. I mean, did the guy play soccer against Mully? Is that why his shins are so bruised? If you really want to know. All right, Thursday Night Football tonight. The Colts are at the Texans. It's actually a game I'm really interested in.
Oh, me
so
too.
I'll be having fun sitting
like
in front of it.
I like watching the Colts.
Blackhawks host the Lightning. Kaner looking to build on the 10-game point streak. And how about Mike Babcock? Mike Babcock getting fired in Toronto. Did you see that coming?
Four seasons in, I did not see that coming. Although they've lost five in a row. So they're doing to him what the Hawks did to Joel Quenneville.
And Omar Vizquel, I need more information, won't return as manager at AA Birmingham. He's leaving the organization.
So who's going to succeed Ricky?
Well, I thought that was a fait accompli.
I have to check the contract.
Yeah. I'm a little shaken by this.
Don't be.
What does he have another job, or did he just say, you know,
I think they agreed to part ways.
Okay.
I'm not hearing that. I'm not hearing that this
so
was
what?
Like,
so his star no longer on the rise?
Mm-hmm.
I love Omar Vizquel.
We need a Birmingham report.
You know what? I'm totally interested in why he left. Was it his idea, their idea? Did he feel he was not, that he had kind of reached a wall? Or, I mean, Chris Getz makes the announcement.
We should
Did
look
they
at
not get along
further in the 5-5.
All right. Very good. We got to get to the 5-5. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Don't miss out on Big Ten basketball. Welsh Ryan Arena, the place this winter to be. The Cats host Norfolk State tomorrow at Welsh Ryan Arena. Single and season tickets are available on sale now at nusports.com.
It's 5-5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5-5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Mitchell Trubisky participated fully in practice and says his hip feels fine, suggesting he'll start Sunday against the Giants. Does that or anything else about what you heard at Halas Hall on Wednesday change the way you view Matt Nagy's decision to pull Trubisky late against the Rams?
Yeah. I think that there's not a shadow of doubt in my mind that Mitchell Trubisky could have finished that game. And I think that that move was made. I'm not saying he didn't have a hip pointer. But I think that move was made because he wasn't moving the football team and they were running out of time. And the coach talked to him before the touchdown was scored. So they thought they were going to have one shot at marching down the field for a victory. And they didn't think Mitch could do it. That is what happened in that game, in my opinion.
I can't help but agree with you. And I will maintain this, what I alluded to yesterday when we talked about the extended hug on the sideline that was captured for national television audience. And I think that this will go down as another example to me. Matt Nagy made more of this than he needed to be. I mean, this was a misjudgment by him. Whether he wanted, maybe, you know, Chase Daniel did give them a better chance in that situation. He's always going to stick by that. But there's a disparity between how bad Mitch was apparently, you know, hampered and how bad I think that, you know, he was, because Mitch Trubisky sounded like a guy that wasn't bothered. I mean, it was painful. He could have played through it, and he looked fine yesterday. And I don't know that by Sunday this is going to be a thing. He's going to start, and it sounded like a guy was going to start. And I just think that you had a situation where we were talking about the head coach's role yesterday and how much impact he has and some of these decisions. I think this is going to go down as another decision in, late in the game that was magnified because of, I don't want to say inexperience, but maybe mishandled a little bit because it didn't have to be as big of a deal as it became.
No, I mean, you're right about that. It definitely didn't have to become a thing. And I think the way that they went about it, whether you want to talk about the body language that was exhibited by Mitch or some of the, I don't want to say secrecy, but some of the inconsistencies, we'll say, in the stories that they were telling after the game, the day after the game. It was just, they've done that so many times this year, and Matt Nagy has talked about, you know, growing pains for him personally, a lot of learning experiences, falling back to earth after last season, and realizing how difficult it is to be an NFL coach this year. One of the things that he has kind of lacked in, I'm not even talking about on-the-field stuff there, play calling and all that, because we've been over that. I think some of the stuff with the media this year, and people can text in, I'm sure they will, they don't care about the media, nobody cares about this and that, but I think it's kind of an important part of the job. Unless you're Bill Belichick, you can't get away with having a poor relationship with the media. I think you have to, you know, be a little bit more forthcoming. You can't treat them like they're idiots because they're not. And I think Matt Nagy has been guilty of that a couple of times so far this year. If Mitch is fine and he's healthy, good. Put him out there. I don't need to see Tyler Bray. He's like 29 years old. He's never thrown. I think actually thrown one pass in the NFL. We certainly don't need to see Chase Daniel. I don't think Mitch is any good, but he is still, for the rest of this year at least, the best option. If he's fine, then he should play. If he's not fine, he shouldn't play, period.
I find myself a little conflicted here because I know in sports many times coaches will have to save an athlete from themselves and they'll push themselves and they don't want to come out of the game. You heard Trubisky talk yesterday. He sounds like a guy that definitely did not want to get taken out of that game. He talked about the flight home being miserable because he couldn't finish the game and because of how he played. But this is a guy that clearly...
Plus, service was terrible.
Exactly. Exactly. But this is a guy that clearly wanted to stay in that game. And I think he could have finished it. And I'm just conflicted here thinking, was this a case of Nagy legitimately being concerned and saying, we don't want Mitch to hurt himself. We don't want to have another situation where we lose him in this final stretch of the season. Or was it what we thought? You know, Trubisky's not getting the job done. Sit down. Let's see what Chase can do. Let's see if Chase can put some points up on the board here with a few minutes left in the game. I think Trubisky could have finished the game. I do. And hell, Chase Daniel doesn't give you anything. I think he could have finished out the game, and he should have finished out the game.
Oh, boy. I mean, this is one of those topics that we're already... It's Thursday, and it's early still, and I've got, like, Mitch hip pointer fatigue. That's why I didn't even answer the question.
Are your hips barking?
You know, always, right? Always. Here's what I think happened, and I think it was great. This is another... If you needed another reason why you should always be listening on Tuesdays at around 8 o'clock, between 8 and 8:30 to this show when Dave Wann sits in here, I just loved how he broke it down and explained it, and I think that's what happened. I think while the story didn't come out crystal clear right after the game, I think Nagy was made aware of the situation, and he watched the guy, and he saw that his legs were now useless, and his arm is pretty much useless. And so since he was all arm, he had nothing to do but sit him down and put Chase in there when he did. He progressively got worse as the game moved on. That's what Wannstedt said he used to do. He would specifically watch the guy after he had gotten the report from the doctors whether he could play or not play. This is crazy. It's the quarterback. I get it. And this is a bad quarterback, and it's a bad offense, and it looks like a bad relationship between the play caller, the head coach, and the quarterback. But boy, oh boy, let's just get to Sunday, get him out there, and see what happens.
That's a great question.
If Giants tackle Nate Solder misses Sunday's game, will Khalil Mack be more or less likely to take over? And will he get more or less attention if Solder plays?
Well, I think that Pat Shurmur is a really smart offensive coach, so I think they're going to try to copy and mimic what Sean McVay did, like every coach has tried. And you're going to run a lot of your offense away from Khalil Mack and funnel it through Leonard Floyd's side as much as possible. I mean, your audible is... you find 52 when you go away from it, and however you want to call that. So that's going to be a problem. But I do think that with the possible injury and Solder missing the game, the Giants have given up 34 sacks in 10 games, and that's, you know, an invitation for the Bears pass rush to get to a young quarterback and harass him into making mistakes, because he will make them. And we'll get to him in a moment. But I think that with your Khalil Mack, you're also motivated to get on the score sheet this week, to really leave a historical record that you were actually part of a game, because that's got to hurt his pride, the fact that he didn't do that against the Rams. I think a couple of teammates described him as being as low after that game and loss as they have seen him since he came to Chicago. So he's got that motivation. He's got the fact that the Giants' offensive line is banged up, and he's got a bad football team and a young quarterback on the other side. So I will be very surprised if Khalil Mack is not an impact player on Sunday.
Well, I think Solder has got a concussion. So he's in concussion protocol. So it's not just some tough guy thing where I'll play through it, give me the shot. He has to be cleared out of concussion protocol. And we'll see if that happens. I think if he does play, I think the Giants are more likely to leave him attempting to block Mack at different points in the game. I think if he does not play, I think that every team will respond the same way, which is make sure that Mack's not the guy that blows up your game plan. So I think Mack will be double, triple. They'll have guys chipping him out of the backfield. The tight end will stay in. I think they'll do everything to keep Mack from blowing up their game. So we could see a situation where Mack is blocked harder and more with Solder out than he would be if they had the better player
that they think might
be able to deal with him. So I just think it's a very interesting sort of game plan thing to keep an eye on, and keep an eye on the player heading into the game. But I would imagine everybody is going to try desperately to keep Khalil Mack from blowing up their game. I think Mack will make a play or two in the game, but I think they're going to desperately try to keep him from making every play. It would help if the Bears could get a lead and we could actually see the defense pin their ears back and go after the quarterback a little bit.
Well, you know, I'm guessing Khalil Mack ends up on the stat sheet at least this week. You know, much was made about that versus the Rams. And sure, listen, every team all season long is going to focus on Khalil Mack. He is still, despite the fact that his numbers aren't where they were last season, and maybe he's not making the exact kind of impact that he did last year, he is still an immensely dangerous player. And of course, every coach and coordinator knows that, and they're going to game plan for him. I think whether or not Nate Solder plays in this game, you know, good player, very rich man. Talk about a culture shock going from New England to the New York Giants, by the way. At least he got paid. But I think that no matter what team, no matter what the personnel is, they're always going to circle Khalil Mack and have the game plan to try to isolate him, or not isolate him, but try to take him out of the game as best as possible, like you saw with the Los Angeles Rams. So I think whether or not Solder or anybody else is playing on the offensive line, it's going to be Khalil Mack the focus. I'm more interested to see if other players, Leonard Floyd, can possibly step up, because we haven't seen that. I mean, we can, at least me, I can handle Khalil Mack maybe not putting up the same numbers if other guys are stepping up when they're not getting the attention, but we haven't seen that at all so far this season, and I think that's an even bigger problem.
Well, I don't see another statless game from Khalil Mack. It's hard to imagine that, but this has certainly been a down year for him, and you see how important now Akeem Hicks even more so is to this defense. And the focus has solely been on stopping Khalil Mack, and it's been successful.
He's always been a little underappreciated, hasn't he?
He sure has. Yeah. He really has, and he knows it. But it just underscores how important Akeem Hicks is to this defense. And I unfortunately don't think that there is a way for Mack to have a big blowout game. I thought Mack would not be stopped by all of the adjustments teams have made, but it's been kind of figured out, it seems. You double, you triple team Mack, you put a lot of pressure on Mack, and the Bears defense is just not the same, and they need Akeem Hicks. Yeah, Kevin's right. You need somebody, maybe Leonard Floyd, somebody to make an impact.
Well, maybe the fact that Mack didn't make the stat sheet last night will change the game plan around. Maybe the Giants won't focus on him as much because maybe people think that he's not as good as he once was. Of course, Leonard Floyd wasn't going to do the job. We all knew that. That's low-hanging fruit for me, and I will take a piece. Thank you very much. So I do expect him to be on the stat sheet. If he does not make the stat sheet this week, then, you know, we talk about Mitchell Trubisky getting benched, then he needs to get benched. I thought I read something the other day about him pouting, like nobody has seen him.
Mac?
Yes.
You think you would bench Mac?
If you're going to pout, you know, Mully, what's your line about to whom much is given, much is expected, something along those lines?
Not my original line, but yeah.
Okay, but you use it a lot, and it makes a lot of sense, and it's a very good line. Okay, like, let's go. I mean,
they are more likely to start Tyler Bray quarterback than bench Khalil Mack.
I'm just saying, like, somebody needs a kick in the pants. Maybe it's him.
Oh, boy. That's...
What kind of question is that?
Sometimes you just have to let it linger a little bit. You have got to let those dust and opinions breathe.
Hot take.
Steaming, exactly. Steaming hot take. Given Danny Dimes' tendency to give the football away, how many takeaways will the Bears have on Sunday? Will they take advantage of their opportunities, and why haven't the Bears forced more turnovers?
I go back to this idea the Bears haven't played with the lead. The Bears have not put their defense in a position where they can load up and go after a quarterback. And the only way to do that is situationally get some points, get ahead, make this team throw. Right? Throw to score, run to win, make them throw. They're running to win because they know the Bears aren't going to score. It's really a problem. I mean, the Bears' pathetic offense is affecting their defense. The defense is what now? Third or fourth in the league, and they're tops in the league in points allowed, right? That is a pretty good statistic. That is what you keep a team to 17 points, you better win the damn game. And the Bears can't score 17 points. So it's hard to win games. That's what's happened here. So I think these things are interconnected. And I am really kind of frustrated by the idea that the teams come and play the Bears and they know exactly how to beat them. You just give the ball to Saquon Barkley and you double up and try to block the front line and then you hope he can beat a linebacker and at the second level and you're going to get your 4 yards and get your – that's what I'm expecting here. And you'll do a little play action and try to beat them down the field or whatever it might be. But the Bears, they don't gear their game plan towards stopping another team. They just want to have a touchdown in every play. And that's where they're at right now. So I think if you want to take advantage of everything you have out there, and they should get a minimum of 3 takeaways in this game. But how am I predicting that? Hell, they got 2. They got 2 in the first 2 possessions.
First quarter.
And it went nowhere.
Yeah. You're right about the lead and playing without a lead. And last year they had a lead a lot more often. And they were a lot more opportunistic. And things, you know, you had a little, in hockey they call it puck luck. Right. You had a lot of breaks that went your way. That's football. And that hasn't happened this year. But it's been partly because games have been so tight. The scoring defense has been, you know, what it needs to be. They should be better than 4-6 if you just look at those numbers, but they aren't. This weekend, though, you have an opportunity as a defense to be as good as you have been since the Vikings left town in September, which is when you peaked. You had the best defensive effort that you had probably of this season. It certainly left the most indelible mark, but this is an opportunity. We call him Danny Dimes. The New York Post referred to him yesterday as Danny the ATM because of the way that he has been dispensing things to opponents. He's a
charitable
defenses.
Young man.
He's a very charitable young man because he has turned the ball over. He has thrown 8 interceptions. He has 13 fumbles, 9 of them lost. He will put the football on the ground and on the numbers if you're a defensive back. So he's young. He can be nervous. He might be a little skittish. And I think if the Bears don't bench Khalil Mack, it could be a long day for Danny Dimes. That was for Dustin.
I know.
Daniel Jones is a interesting character to me. I mean, this not much buzz around him at Duke. He's taken 6th overall by the Giants. Everybody is heads are exploding after the pick. And, of course, New York fans are angry, as they often are. And this kid kind of comes into the season. Everybody already dismissing him, and he's, you know, you mentioned the turnovers there, but I think he's performed admirably well. I mean, he's thrown 15 touchdown passes. Sure, you don't want to give the ball away 18 times in 9 starts. That's not a recipe for success, but he's a rookie. He's on a bad team.
You know what's really disturbing about his turnovers is we see a ton of rookie quarterbacks throw interceptions. Yeah. That's not a big deal. You're learning about defenses, reading defenses, the speed of the game, but fumbling is a killer. And that is one that It's not like you break that habit.
It's hard to outgrow.
Learn the speed of the
yes.
deep. That's exactly right.
Yep, that's why.
Yeah, and I think that given his tendency to give the ball away, his charitable nature, and it is, of course, the holiday season, we should all be more charitable at this time of the year. So hopefully this Sunday, Danny Dimes gets in the holiday spirit and he gives the ball away a few times. And this is, I don't want to call it a test for the Bears defense or anything like that, but in a season that has been so lacking in the takeaways compared to what we saw last season, if they're not able to do it against Daniel Jones and the bloody awful New York Giants this Sunday, then something is really, really wrong here. And I don't want to call it a test, but there's probably a better word that I'm not thinking of right now to describe it. But if they can't take the ball away from the Giants, then this season was just cursed from the jump.
This could be a good game for the Bears defense, a get-right type of game. So I think they will take advantage of opportunities, and I'll set the bar at 2 takeaways as they did last week. If I'm Chuck Pagano and I'm giving away Chuck Bucks, that's what I'm telling. That's what I'm telling the guys and on the defense.
I forgot about Chuck Bucks.
Chuck
Bucks.
Too. That's awesome.
Yeah, if I'm giving away the Chuck
Bucks. Conversion rate on Chuck Bucks.
Yeah, it's gone. It's really hit bottom.
It really has. But right. I'm saying, all right, let's at least try to replicate the 2 takeaways from last week. Let's try to make an impact. I agree, Molly. Part of the regression of the defense is a product of the bad Bears offense. And when you are playing from behind and playing without leads for the entire season, this is what happens.
Again, just for clarification, I'm benching Mac against the Lions if he can't get his act together against the Giants. I do expect him to have a big game. I do.
You've gotten a lot of reaction here from the text line.
That's
not most of it is referencing CBD. So I don't know.
Yes, the CBD
supposed to be without the high.
The CBD I endorse.
You know what I call
non-high.
But I call that positive branding.
Absolutely,
that's right.
Absolutely. There you go. Shout out to CBDistillery.com.
Wear the hat.
Listen, you got to get some hot breath on this quarterback. He will turn it over. But I do think if you're smart and you saw what the Rams did to the Bears, why would you put the ball in the air unless you absolutely had to? Run the ball. If Saquon Barkley was worth the draft capital that you used,
and he was
Giants, and he probably was,
he absolutely
okay,
was.
Then use him this week against the Bears and win a game for their fans.
He's a problem.
Be charitable, be hospitable, be thankful to the Giants fans this week.
See, I love Saquon Barkley, and he's a phenomenal player, but is any running back really worth being taken that high?
That one.
I mean, given how short their shelf life is, how replaceable some
know,
of
man.
Them are.
Franchise changer.
He's as close a thing as I've seen to Peyton, and I'm not just saying that. I mean, I think he's a really good running back. I mean, Walter's the greatest in my lifetime for me, but I think this kid's special, and you draft high special.
I agree he's special, but number 2 overall for a running back in the modern NFL. I don't know.
Good questions again.
What do you think of Derrick Rose saying he'd still be on the Bulls if load management had been in vogue when he was on the team? Do you agree? And would Rose have led the Bulls to an NBA title if not for the injuries?
No, boy. Well, look, like everyone in Chicago, I mean, I'm happy Derrick Rose has moved on, grown up, and found success and contentment at this stage of his career. But if we're being honest about his time here, as he wants to do when looking back, let's not the love fest obscure the fact that if Rose, in fact, invited some of the criticism that came his way. I mean, he created a lot of controversy. He helped build the wall between himself, the fans, and the media. And a lot of this stuff overlooks that. You can call him a pioneer in load management if you want, and I understand why you would do that. It's become a thing in the NBA. I'm not sure what he was doing was load management. I recall him talking about preserving his body for his kids' graduation, business meetings, retirement, more than staying fresh and healthy for the playoffs and winning a championship for the Bulls, like Kawhi Leonard did in Toronto, like the Spurs did when they started this whole trend with Popovich. All those things were done in the name of winning, playing deep in the playoffs, preserving your team and your roster for a deep run. I'm not sure that was the motivation or even the stated purpose whenever we heard Derrick Rose try to explain why he was wanting to protect his body. We all made mistakes. And probably there were a lot of bad assumptions made about Derrick Rose and with the way that he chose and the path that he took. I'm glad he's evolved. But Rose, the fans, the media, we all contributed from his sudden fall from grace, not just the outsiders in Derrick Rose's inner circle.
Listen, this is more revisionist history than I've seen in a very long time. You got to be kidding me. Does nobody remember what happened in that era? Does no one remember the multiple injuries and the fact that, you know, Derrick, he really didn't want to play due to injury? So let's just take this to the natural extreme. So if he played 60 games a year instead of 82, that means he wouldn't get hurt. It wasn't a problem until he got hurt, and then he got hurt repeatedly. So I think there was a little brittleness involved in this thing. I think he would have been hurt anyway, and I think that load management would not have made a difference. I think there was a certain defiance and a certain sort of a battle between him and management that was never really resolved, and they didn't know who they were talking to. Someone from his camp would call. Derek, I mean, look, God bless him. I'm glad that he's still in the league. But does he remember his career at all? Derek left here, went to New York. He wound up out of basketball. He was in Cleveland for a sandwich. He wound up out of basketball. Tibbs throws him a lifeline, and he kind of revives himself, and here he is now in Detroit. That's NBA journeyman, right? Derek, with load management, would not have remained MVP Derek, which in his mind, I think, is what he's seeing. So all the people that didn't like Derek or had a problem with Derek or don't agree with his lifestyle, whatever it might have been, that all stems from the story as it went on. And the reaction was the reaction to the story of his career. And now we're going to pretend like everybody turned on him and, oh, poor Derek, we should have been all so much nicer to him. Any fool that would apologize for going and dealing with the story as it happens is, again, I guess you're just looking for some sort of personal contact with the guy. I don't know why you would do something like that, because all of the stuff with Derek was driven by Derek and his camp and the lack of communication and everything that happened. I don't feel remotely bad for the times. I love the kid, Chicago kid, great story. People at Simeon worked hard to make sure he could get to Memphis. He went to Memphis. They would have had to vacate a title had they won it. Instead, they lost that title. Derek comes to the Bulls. Great start to his career, and here we are.
Well, I'll answer the last question here. Would Rose have led the Bulls to an NBA title if not for injuries?
No.
LeBron James still exists.
Had created a super team. And I mean, by the way, they had an awful damn good team in San Antonio. Would the Bulls have been the best team in the league? It's just not true.
No, that team wasn't built to win a championship. They were built to bust their arses and try hard and play Tibbs ball and lead the league in regular season victories. But when it got down to it in the playoffs, they just weren't good enough to beat the Heat.
But what if Omer had stayed healthy?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the kind of stuff that's coming out. We were this close to a title, yeah, other than the fact that
now
we didn't win any.
That's ridiculous. It was a good team and a fun team to watch. Absolutely. I look back at that era fondly. You know, obviously, it's not the 90s Bulls or anything like that, but it's the next best thing we've had since then. And I was very attached to that team. I think there's something to this. I think, you know, Derek, I don't want to call him a pioneer or anything, but you look at 81 games as a rookie, 78 games the year after that, 81 games the year after that, and he was playing 37, 38 minutes every time out there. And his style of play was not conducive to playing 38 minutes a game 80 times a year. I think there's something to this. I'm sure you guys will talk about it a little bit later in depth, because I'm very interested to hear what you have to say a little bit more about it and what some of the callers have to say about it. But I think there's something to it. I think that had he been managed a little bit more properly, no, they don't win an NBA title, but I think that maybe he doesn't become the journeyman that he has.
I'll say there was a lot of scrutiny surrounding Derrick Rose's reasoning for not wanting to play, and that was because of him talking about thinking of his son and his future and all of that and being healthy for his kid. And I think that no matter what you would have done, whether load management was a thing or not, if that were the reasoning, there's a large segment of fans, there's a lot of people in the NBA and around the league that hear that and think that it's a me first thing as opposed to the team. And I think the scrutiny would have still been there. So I don't think it would have made a difference. It may have made a difference in his health, but I don't think it would have made a difference in terms of the scrutiny surrounding his reasoning for wanting to play less. And in terms of an NBA title, no, LeBron James was always in the way.
Yeah, LeBron and his teams were always in the way. He had a full year off to recover from that injury. The other thing is his game, his MVP game, was doing what? Going to the basket and scoring and getting fouled and then shooting free throws, right? That was his game. What can't Derrick Rose do? He can't really make a jump shot outside of 12 feet.
He's better now, though.
Now better he can. Now.
He's evolved. But at the time, his game had not evolved. Yeah.
So after the full year of rest and relaxation and rehabilitation, okay, the three R's, he then came back, and what did he try to do? He tried to go back to the rim. He couldn't do that. He didn't. He should have evolved during that time off, and that's what the problem is. I'm just amazed at the love affair at the United Center last night.
I really am every time he comes back.
I have taken my foot off the gas. I was very down on him, and after watching the documentary that NBC Sports Chicago, former Comcast, did on him, I changed my tune and do feel bad for him, and I'm glad that he was able to get out of Inglewood, okay? They definitely made it, as he told his mom, okay? I hold nothing against him, and good for him.
His hair looks cool.
It's a tough one, Bruce. It's a very fair question, and obviously a ripe one.
The White Sox announced Omar Vizquel won't return as manager at AA Birmingham and will leave the organization, ending speculation that he will succeed Rick Renteria in Chicago. Are you surprised, and who does that make the next most rumored successor?
I'm surprised. I'm damaged. I'm hurt by this. I thought Omar, how old is Omar? 52? He's in his 50s, isn't he? I thought he was ready.
Is he?
He was ready to walk right into that job. I thought it was a fait accompli, at least in my mind, that they were going to get good and then bring in a good manager. So, yeah, this is bad for me. Who's the next guy? I mean, I don't know. Is Joe Maddon taken?
Yes.
Okay, well then I guess David Ross will be the next manager.
Oh, God.
You know, he got fired. Let's call it what it is. Chris Getz told Scott Merkin that they had decided to go their separate ways. That happens in sports. He got fired. The heir apparent no longer is apparently employed by the White Sox. I was surprised, though, because I bought into some of the same narrative. I don't think he had a great year. You hear whispers about he wasn't as good of a manager as maybe the media made him out to be. I think this says, number one, the Sox are committed to Ricky Renteria, maybe more than we think. Number two, the heir apparent now becomes, I think, a guy who is 30 years old, managed their minor single-A team, Justin Gershali, I believe.
No, that's Jeremy Colleton, you think.
Yeah, well, maybe that's the trend. Or maybe if you follow baseball trends and Ricky is out this year for whatever reason, A.J. Pierzynski, because he's an ex-catcher in a TV booth. Because it worked for the Cubs. Why not?
He's used to teams not liking him.
We don't know if it's worked for the Cubs yet. Let's slow our rolls there on that one.
Okay.
All right?
The question says most rumored successor. If Ricky gets in trouble, AJ definitely will be the most rumored successor.
Okay. I think that we all fell in love with the idea of Omar Vizquel becoming the manager of the White Sox because he was such a delightful player to watch. He's a really good dude. Good interview, smart guy. You know, he checks all of the boxes there. And I think we fell in love with the idea of it more than the actual realization. Because apparently, from what I let, what I've been reading, that analytically he wasn't where they wanted him to be. He had an interview with the Angels last season and said that he was thrown by the stress on analytics that was kind of doled out in that interview. And maybe Omar just wasn't ready for that world. You know, he's kind of that small ball, steal bases, bunting kind of guy. And maybe they just didn't want that in the organization. And I think if that's the reason why they let him go, that's a good thing. Because you need to go forward, not backward. I think that the next, maybe not most rumored, but an interesting name, Joe McEwing, a guy who's been in the organization for a while. He was a decent player in his day, a smart guy. Maybe he could be down the line, or just bring Ozzie back. I'd be okay with that, too.
Hey, there you go. Now you're talking.
But what would we do on Thursday mornings?
We talk to Ozzie.
Okay.
See?
I will say, I guess I'm slightly surprised, but a move that needed to be made. Hey, I'm on board with bringing Ozzie back. I think that would be great. But a realistic answer, I think Kevin gave, is McEwing.
We're tight on time, and most of the time I should stay out of White Sox business. I am surprised. Absolutely surprised. I think what Kevin just mentioned is very interesting. And for our purposes, I'm great. Ozzie, be fine with me, but bring in AJ. for our purposes.
We have a texter suggesting Drake LaRouche because Drake LaRouche is a leader.
How about Adam Eaton?
You keep those LaRouche.
Adam Eaton.
Keep those LaRouche freaks away from my ball club.
312-644-6767.
Nobody like Eaton.
It's Pauly and Haw on the Score.
Eaton, nobody like you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.